Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
You'll listen to all of it on WNYC. Dr. Mary Schmidt Campbell has been a force in the art world for decades, from heading up the Studio Museum in Harlem to presiding over NYU's Tisch School of the Arts for more than 20 years to her current role as the president of Spelman College. Dr. Campbell has ensured the legacies of arts education in the U.S. as well as of artists of color in art history and art institutions. Her new book, An American Odyssey, The Life and Work of Romare Bearden, details Bearden's life, influences, historical context, and how he came to create his famous collages later in his career. We are very pleased that you are in studio today. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me, Allison.
It's such a great, such an interesting read. It's an interesting book about art. It's an interesting book about history. It's an interesting book about New York and African-American history. But the title, the subtitle, The Life and Work of Romare Bearden. What is it? We're going to get into detail because there's a lot of great detail.
Okay.
What is it about his life that we should know a few things to understand his work?
Bearden had the great fortune of being born at the beginning of the 20th century, and he died at the end of the 20th century. And he was born into the home of his great grandparents, who were emancipated slaves. So his life really intersects with virtually every single major milestone that marks the emergence of African-American citizens. So his great-grandparents were a product of Reconstruction. His parents migrated north along with millions of others migrating north as part of the Great Migration in response to Jim Crow. He grew up, he came of age as an artist during the Depression and the New Deal, served in World War II, and then came back to New York and really became part of what would become post-war the surging civil rights movement. And his art and his life responded to each and every one of those changes.
Well, let's break those down a little bit. You start with his family when he is born, and he's born into you write privilege.
Yes,
somewhat of an
definitely.
Affluent family. Can you tell us a little bit more about his family and then his place in his family, little Romy?
Well, he was born in Charlotte, North Carolina in 1911. And his great-grandparents had, after slavery, migrated their way to North Carolina. And in the process, his great-grandfather had worked on the railroads. He bought lands. He was a landowner. He built several houses. He had his own business. He even aspired to a political position. He tried to get an appointment at the Mint, which was located in Charlotte. So they really were part of this notion that African Americans are now freed. And so they have all the entitlements of citizenship. And they had all that hopefulness. And that's where Bearden was born, in their house, in their household, as part of that radical hopefulness.
And what did that afford him? What did that allow him?
That allowed him, well, it certainly allowed them prosperity. It meant that they had the luxury of really enjoying their cultural heritage. His parents especially were educated. His mother was graduated from college. His father attended college. His grandmother was a preceptor at Bennett College and a dorm matron. So he was surrounded with an educated family. And when they did decide to migrate to Harlem, his mother became the center of this incredibly rich political and social and cultural revolution that was going on, and we call the Harlem Renaissance.
And the reason they left South Carolina was for their safety.
For their safety. By 1900...
North Carolina, I'm sorry.
Yes. By 1900, Jim Crow law was pretty ubiquitous throughout the South. And by that time, almost all the Southern states had taken back the right to vote. Bearden's family actually found that it was dangerous for them to be there. His father had been arrested for breaking curfew during a trip to a store. His father, who was brown-skinned and Bearden was light-skinned, was mistaken for trying to kidnap this little light-skinned boy, and was almost set upon. So his father began to sense that this was dangerous. This was not a place where they could flourish, and made the decision to migrate to New York City.
In your book, their pages, I counted, 339 to 413 are notes. This is such an intensely researched book, which is fantastic. Where did you start your research?
So one of the most interesting things that I discovered as I was doing the research is that the black press during that time is incredibly rich. Bearden's mother was a correspondent for the Chicago Defender from 1927 to 1943. And the black press, the Baltimore Afro-American, the Pittsburgh Courier, the New York Amsterdam News, New York Age, all of these papers were just the source for everyday life, for special events, for opinion. And what I found is if I went back and I read this carefully, it would point me in other directions and point me to other sources. So I kind of use the black press as sort of my base.
It's so much fun to read those papers. I mean, you can go down a rabbit hole
That's right.
A long time.
Yes.
it's a really good time, actually, for history nerds. My guest is Dr. Mary Schmidt Campbell. Her name of her book is An American Odyssey, The Life and Work of Romare Bearden. So the family comes north. At what point did he realize that he had talent and that he might like to try to make a go of it as an artist?
Well, there are lots of stories about how he got started, and some of them start back when he was in fifth grade, when he had a friend who was feeble and sick, but who could draw exquisitely well. And so that's one source story, that he became enchanted with drawing through this friend, Eugene. Another story is that his grandmother encouraged him to compete in a poster contest. But we know for sure that by the time he got to Lincoln University, which was the first college that he attended, his name is listed on the masthead of their yearly publication as H.R. Bearden, cartoonist. So we know that at least by then he was starting to think of himself as an artist.
When did he establish himself in Harlem as an artist? At what point?
So he came out really, he first started as a cartoonist. And the cartoons are really serious. If you look at all of the cartoons that he did, there's actually quite a fair number of them. He did cartoons for the Crisis magazine, for Opportunity. He did them for the Baltimore Afro-American. And he looked at topics like the Ku Klux Klan. He looked at topics like the lack of employment for African Americans. He looked at the Scottsboro trial. He even did a cartoon that questioned whether or not African Americans should enlist in the Army for World War II, because there had been the promise of a good life had been denied them after World War I. So I would say, as a cartoonist, that's when he's really trying to understand how to translate ideas and issues into visual images.
And you mentioned that he did enlist in the Army. Obviously, this was during World War II, before Truman desegregated the military. What impact did that have on him, and what impact do you think it had on his future work?
So that's an interesting question, because he had grown up in Harlem, which was at that time a kind of what I call cultural demilitarized zone. So he had, in fact, had a fair amount of cultural crossing. He had gone to Boston University and NYU. He'd been his friends were all connected with the New Deal. So he had been in a Harlem where there were a lot of opportunities for cross-cultural connections. That changed abruptly when he entered the Army. The Army was segregated to the point of absurdity. And he tells story after story of how he and one other officer would have to sit alone, and they'd have to make meals exclusively for them because the dining facilities were so segregated. And that had a really dispiriting impact on him.
Although he was going through this emotionally and personally, he was still creating art. And some of his first art shows were when he was still in the Army, correct?
Well, his very first art show was a couple of years before
1940.
A couple of years before he went into the Army. But while he was in the Army, he continued to work. And it was during that time that his artwork began to change very radically. Because up until that time, he was really a race man, and he was really doing visual images that reflected the life and conditions of African Americans. But when he got into the Army, he decided he wanted to try out more, what he called more universal themes, themes based on the Bible or classical literature. And his art began to change radically. He moved away from naturalistic images into highly abstract figures that were, frankly, race neutral.
During this time, as I'm reading the book, I'm thinking about people, other artists who were making art at that time, whether it be Pollock or Lee Krasner. Was there any sort of cross-pollination between Black artists like Bearden and some of the downtown artists?
After the war, there was. In fact, Bearden himself belonged to a gallery called the Kootz Gallery, and in the Kootz Gallery was Adolf Gottlieb, Robert Motherwell, a little bit later, Hans Hoffmann. And so Bearden did have contact with those artists, as did Norman Lewis. Norman Lewis probably even more, because Lewis eventually moved from Harlem downtown and had his studio downtown. And actually, Bearden worked during the day. He had a real job, so he couldn't hang out at all the bars and go to the conferences. But Lewis could. And so, in fact, Lewis was probably even more connected to those than Bearden was. But that was a very short period of time, maybe 4 or 5 years in his life. And even while he was connected to that group, he always was kind of on the margins of the group. He wasn't really at the heart of it. And so when Kootz closed his gallery in 1948 and then reopened it a year later, he reopened it without Bearden.
In the book you describe his life at one point. Bearden was juggling a new marriage, his social worker job, his father's health, and preparation for his first solo painting exhibition. He was also working on songwriting. It's interesting. It's not the idea of an artist smoking cigarettes in Paris and just creating art, that he had a real person's life.
That's right. He worked for 30 years, from the time he graduated from New York University till about 1966. He had a job where he went out, and it wasn't a desk job. He was a caseworker. He had to go out as a social worker before the war. His area was Harlem, so he had to he had a caseload that was in his neighborhood in Harlem. And these were people who were experiencing unemployment at a rate of 50%. There was a threat of being evicted from their homes. There were real health disparities during that era. So he had real challenges as a social worker. After the war, he was assigned what we now call the Romani, but in those days he called them gypsies. That was his purview. Mm. And so every day he would go out and he would have to do this serious job for 8 hours, come home, go into a studio, and then work. And so it's really extraordinary to me that he was able to produce this body of work with that kind of a grueling routine.
You also write that his awakening to the civil rights movement was slow.
Yes.
Why was this? And then what happened once he did?
Well, I think it's...
awaken to it.
He married in the mid-50s. And his wife, Nanette Rohan, who was extraordinary, helped him get back to painting. He had had a breakdown, and she helped him get back to painting. And he was picked up by a gallery dealer, and he was doing well as an abstract painter. In fact, his painting was chosen for John F. Kennedy's suite in the Carlisle shortly after Kennedy was inaugurated. So he was having some success again as an artist. But when the March on Washington came, and he and another group of African-American artists decided to call together a group of artists whom they named Spiral, he began in his conversations with those artists to get very much connected not only to them, but to images that he said that just began to flood from his past. And he began to experiment in his studio, not showing anybody publicly, but just doing these experiments in collage. And his dealer happened to see them one day and said, "That's your next show."
And that would come to be a great part of his legacy. I know you met him When you think about what his legacy is in the art world, what is it?
Joe, I have constantly been surprised at how young artists embrace Bearden. And I think what they see in him are several things. One, that he did struggle to get to where he needed to be as an artist, but that he never stopped, that he kept going, and that he faced these issues of race and representation head on, and he kind of struggled his way through them. I think they also feel very much that he decided what voice he wanted for himself, his integrity, that he decided he was going to be the artist he needed to be. And so I think they feel comforted by that fact that he did that early on as an African-American artist. And then there's just the sheer mastery of his work. The collages are exquisitely done. It's beautiful craftsmanship. He opened up himself to the entire world of art, whether it was European art or African-American or African or Persian miniatures. He just allowed himself to pick and choose through the world art what he needed for himself as an artist. And I think finally, Bearden was incredibly supportive of the young people around him, other artists, curators, scholars. He was a genuine activist over and beyond all this. It wasn't enough for him to be successful. He wanted a community of artists, writers, and scholars to be successful.
Well, if you would like to learn something, this is a great book. American Odyssey, The Life and Work of Romare Bearden. Mary Schmidt Campbell, thank you so much for coming to the studio today.
Thank you, Allison.
You've been listening to All of It on WNYC. WNYC's culture editor, Charlie Herman, is up next.